Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Confident Hypnotherapist. This week, I have the fantastic Ernest McLeod here with me to chat all about being a confident hypnotherapist, stop smoking, and why it is that many hypnotherapists fear doing stop smoking clients. At least that's my belief anyway. I don't know if Ernest necessarily agrees with that or not, but I guess we're about to find out in this conversation. Hey, Ernest, how you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Lawrence. Thanks for having me this morning.
Thank you. And I have to say, you know, you've recently put together the most remarkable stop smoking course. I think it had something like over 40 to 50 people come along for the first run. And, you know, I have to start by saying, you know, in Melbourne, we have the fantastic Greg Riley, fantastic hypnotherapist here, who had said quite openly that he couldn't see himself ever doing stop smoking clients.
Yes.
He did your course. He is now so on board with seeing stop smoking that he's writing articles, and it's just become a revelation for him. So clearly you worked wonders with this particular course. What made you decide to put together a course in stop smoking?
Look, I probably thought of myself as I'm never going to do a course. I never saw myself as someone who would be able to, not technically able to, but have the knowledge that needed to be shared. And it wasn't until I was putting together a stop smoking at home, like a self-help course, and I had a mentor of mine go through my content, and he picked up on one of the techniques that I've developed and he said, oh, I really like that. I'm going to use that for myself. And it wasn't until that moment I sort of really understood what sort of, I guess, gem I had there. You know, I developed this probably over the last, so I started hypnotherapy about 8 years ago. And one of the first things I got into was stop smoking. But I noticed over the first sort of 3 or 4 years that, you know, people are struggling sometimes. And what is it that's actually, why isn't it working as well for some as it is for others? And so over time, I really developed my, I guess, my own process. I won't call it a protocol because it really is a combination of different techniques that I've picked up and learned over the years. Yeah. But yes, this, I guess this comment from my mentor is what gave me a light bulb moment that actually, yeah, I do actually have something that's really valuable, you know? And then he suggested, you know, why not put together a course? Because my big desire had been to help more people. And that also was a light bulb moment for me that, and really, I guess, an acceptance. I accepted that the way to help more people for me is actually to help therapists.
Yeah.
Help therapists help more people. And that's really become my mission. And so look, I think from idea to putting up a date for the course was maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then it might've been another 2 weeks, you know, from the time we released a date and announced it to actually doing the course was a very short period of time. I think from memory, it was again, 2 weeks for me to, I guess, you know, sort of create the outline and the framework for that course. But as you said, look, there were several people like Greg who either had never thought about doing quit smoking or just as Greg, you know, sort of had the opinion that they're never going to do quit smoking, just not for me. Greg did an amazing testimonial video for me the other day. You know, and it's just amazing the turnaround that people have gotten from that. And you're quite right. It's, you know, why are people, that question, why are people, therapists who are really competent, therapists sort of stopping from the quit smoking?
I know from my own personal experience, I was never a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I often felt like I couldn't identify with the challenges a smoker might have, not in the same way that I could, you know, identify with someone who had anxiety, as I used to experience panic attacks, or phobias, as I hated going to the dentist. Not this morning. Went to the dentist as I do every 3 months ago. So all those things that, you know, I used to experience, I know how to deal with and I can help people. But when it came to smoking, I couldn't really get into that same mindset. And I think that's what held me back. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, of course, is that I think this is very much this pass versus fail mindset that goes on. You know, with anxiety, you can help people reduce it on a continuum from, you know, 8 down to 4 or whatever. But with smoking, I think there's often this idea that either they stop smoking or they continue smoking. Very black and white that goes on.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know, was that ever a mindset that you had when you started out? As a hypnotherapist seeing smokers?
Yes.
Like, I mean, what were you going through when you started out seeing those sort of clients?
That's a really great question. And sort of trying to think back, as I said, you know, I started 8 years ago, and quit smoking and weight loss were sort of my two staple services when I started, because I found that they were really easy to do. I'd put out an ad on something similar to Groupon that existed around back in 2012. And I had something like 140 purchases of that. And the offer was either for quit smoking or for weight loss. And look, the reason I did quit smoking was because it's such an easy thing to advertise, you know. Now that I've been doing it for quite a few years, I understand that the general perception of hypnotherapy is it works for smoking.
Yeah.
You know, because even so many clients, and I always ask clients, have you used hypnotherapy for anything before? And even those clients that have never used it before and don't really know anything about it and sort of, you know, it's their first time and it's completely new to them, but often they know someone who's used it.
Mm.
And what they've used it for was for smoking. So I guess we could say there's a very positive perception that hypnotherapy works for smoking.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that's what made it, for me, an easy decision to advertise it. Mm. Now, I had advertised, I had to do it. There was no question about it. So if I can maybe take a step back, you know, I sort of really just stumbled into hypnotherapy in 2011, it would have been. And when I say stumbled, a work colleague at the time had learned hypnotherapy and was, I volunteered as a, you know, a guinea pig for him to practice with.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really enjoyed it. And then a few months after that, there was a weekend workshop, Introduction to Hypnotherapy. And I thought, oh, let's find out a little bit more about this because I really enjoyed it. And maybe I can find out about a bit more about myself, actually. Mm-hmm. So my real agenda was just for my own benefit. And so I went and did this this weekend, and I went away from that with a few scripts to use. And so I just put out to my friends on Facebook, hey, anybody who wants to do a relaxing hypnosis session, I'm looking for some volunteers. And I had maybe, you know, half a dozen of people come through and did sessions with them. And I just noticed how much they enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I also noticed how easy it actually was to do, because even though I couldn't explain what was going on, I just was following the process and something was happening.
Mm.
And they were feeling relaxed. So it was working. And then I met someone who was a hypnotherapist who said, oh, so you're interested in hypnotherapy? In a couple of months, there's some people coming here to Adelaide that do a diploma. I studied with them. Why don't you go and study with them? And that's what I did. So I did a diploma in hypnotherapy and psychotherapy, which was really interesting. And literally, as soon as that was over, I faced a decision, okay, what do I do now? Because there's two pathways, actually there's three pathways that I could have taken. One would have been, yeah, it was nice, and that's the end of it.
Yep.
The other one would have been, yeah, I want to do this, but I think I need to do more study. And then the third one is, yeah, I'm really liking what this is and what it can do. Now, the best thing for me is to actually go out and get some experience. And that's the choice I made, is I saw that now I've got the tool. The only way I'm going to make this tool useful in my hand is by actually using it.
Mm.
And so that's the approach I did. And that's why I went out and I think somebody else who I met at the course was telling me in a conversation about having used this platform to do offers for hypnotherapy. So that's literally how I stumbled into then doing a quit smoking offer. And so it was quit smoking and weight loss. And I'd say probably a good 75% of those purchases were for quit smoking. And yes, look, therefore I really didn't face that thought. I didn't give myself the opportunity to think about that. Hey, what if this doesn't work?
Yeah.
Okay. I approached it that I'm having fun, and the best way to make myself better at this is really just to do it, to experience it. And, but you're right. Quit smoking is so instant.
Mm.
It's, we know if it's worked or not worked, because there's no grade of success. Like you mentioned, you know, with anxiety, you know, a person's life, it can be so much better just going from, yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 negative to now it's only 4 out of 10. Whereas quit smoking, it's, I'm having a smoke. Even one smoke, that's still a smoker, or there's no smoking.
Yeah. Although you do notice some people who will say that they've reduced
their
smoking. And so I think that can be seen as some form of success. But they can sometimes be the ones that might phone up and say, this hasn't worked. I've only gone from 20 to 4 cigarettes a day, but this hasn't worked. I'm still smoking those 4. And I guess, you know, there has to be some acceptance about the fact that there could be a continuum on this. Even if they haven't stopped, are they perhaps stepping more towards being ready to become that non-smoker?
Yes. Look, I think as therapists, I think we have to accept that what we're doing is not, it's not 100% success.
There's nothing that's 100% success.
No.
Or else we'd just be doing that. So that would be the answer. We would just do that one thing if we knew that it was 100% successful all the time. So
yes. So, but I think the important thing is actually to accept that and acknowledge that. And maybe that's one of the things that is, you know, holding some people back from, you know, getting into, be it quit smoking or something else, because they're too worried about it has to work every time. Or maybe they're worried about, you know, what if it doesn't work? How do I deal with that? Is that reflecting bad on me? And look, thinking about, maybe I'll share some of the experiences I've had with clients where it just hasn't worked. Look, I think over the years I've developed a bit of a sense on when I'm speaking to a client in the pre-talk to work out if they're really ready to do it. Because we know that the responsibility is with the client, and the only way the client is going to take the responsibility for whatever outcome they are seeing us for is that they actually have a desire to do that. It doesn't matter how big that desire is, but they need a desire to do that. It needs to be them that wants it, because then they'll take that responsibility, not, you know, coming there because, oh, my doctor told me I need to quit, you know, because otherwise I can't go through a life-saving operation. And, you know, you'd ask yourself, well, you're being told by your doctor you need a life-saving operation. Why wouldn't you want to quit? So we need to accept that it's not our responsibility as a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
It is the client's responsibility. And I have, look, over the years, maybe a couple of handfuls of people that I've actually turned away and said, look, I don't think you're ready for this to work for you. And I think it's important to say, not say, I don't think you want to quit. But I'm just put it that way. I don't think this is, you know, this is a time for you that this is going to work. You know, come back in a few months' time when you feel ready. But you're quite right. You know, you do get those people that come back and say, I'm still smoking. But I'd say the majority of those that come back that say that I'm still smoking also say, I've noticed a change. I've noticed I'm smoking less.
Mm.
You know, I'm not smoking as much as I used to be. Or there's only certain times when I'm smoking. And look, I guess, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the, you know, 20-80 rule.
Yes.
And, you know, we probably could as therapists put together a process that is literally going to, you know, touch 99.99% of everyone that comes in, catering for all the different possibilities. But we'd probably be spending a whole afternoon with them.
Mm, wouldn't we just?
And the question is that effective?
Yeah.
You know, when for 80% or more, a 90-minute session works, we can put enough into 90 minutes that is going to cover a good 80% of what people need. And then if there's something that we didn't cater for that they are facing, well, maybe we just help them with that in another session. And that's my approach. Yeah, I do two sessions, but I frame it up that the first session is really there for them to quit smoking. The second session is there for them if they need it. And I think for the majority of them, it's enough to know that they have backup if they need it, that is actually helping them knowing that they can do it. Look, I've never actually had a client come back and jumped up and down and said, this didn't work.
Yeah.
I have had some come back and say, oh, look, it didn't work. I don't think I'm ready for it.
Hmm.
And that's sort of part of my pre-talk is a little bit telling them that they're the ones that need to take responsibility for this. And I think that's why I've never had a client come back to, you know, jump up and down and say, I did it wrong. They've recognized that they were the ones to take responsibility, and they're accepting that they're not ready. And that's probably the big thing is for therapists to, you know, us as therapists, again, we shouldn't expect of ourselves that we're going to get 100% hit rate. You know, otherwise we'd need to be, you know, mind readers to really be able to read what, you know, this specific client needs. And I don't think we, you know, enough experience is going to get us to that point.
I think that is a really important point, though, because I think that people, when they become hypnotherapists, especially if they're going to focus on stop smoking, there's that real desire to make sure that people get the value that they're paying for. And in that instance, the value is perceived as being to stop smoking.
Yes.
But what if they don't stop smoking? Does that mean they didn't get the value? And I guess the question there is more so, well, did they get value in other way from the session? Did they perhaps understand and have more insight about what the problem actually is for them that keeps that smoking behavior in place, even if they didn't get that outcome that they were expecting to get? And, you know, I think that that's a great takeaway as well for people to recognize that if they're creating a space where people can comfortably and safely explore what it is that is driving this behavior, that could be of equal value. Well, not equal value, but it's still great value to be able to get a better understanding there.
Yes, yes. Look, I think probably as therapists, we actually don't put enough value, generalization, of course, but we don't put enough value on what our clients are probably getting. And this is one thing that I really was in the quit smoking course. I did talk about quite a bit, because probably quit smoking is one of those things where you can really see the value.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, if somebody who's overweight loses 20 kilos, how do you put value on that? You know, yes, their life is better. Even with anxiety going from an 8 to a 4, how do you put value on that? Life is better. Life is dramatically improved, and in a lot of cases probably improved so much more than for a smoker. Mm. But with the smokers, we can put real value on there, because we know how much they're spending a week. You know, on average now in Australia, a smoker is spending nearly $10,000 a year.
Really? I mean, that much?
About that, $10,000 a year.
Imagine what you could do with that $10,000.
In 20, 30 years of not smoking, exactly.
I know what I probably couldn't do with that $10,000 right now, and that's travel overseas. But apart from that, that would be the normal thing I'd do with that $10,000. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, that's, I think, we should think about the value that we're giving our clients. You know, what is $500 or $1,000 to someone who's saving year in, year out, $10,000?
Absolutely.
You know, and I think start of this year, I had a client who sent a message through, smoke-free 2 years, I've saved $25,000. You know, it's success. You know, and I think if we focus on the success we have, and I should have thought about this when I started. And, you know, if I would work out how many dollars I've helped clients save over the past 8 years, you know, I probably should charge a royalty or something. But
structure based on how many years you stay. Yeah, exactly.
So, and that's just a small part of what they're actually getting out of it. You know, the health, the acceptance that they're getting of themselves, not just being accepted by other people. Now, you know, because the whole social perception of smoking has turned around 180 degrees. You know, it sort of was the thing to do. And if you weren't a smoker, it sort of nearly was, why aren't you smoking? And now it is, oh, you're smoking. It's completely changed. So can you imagine, you know, how a smoker and I know you said actually that, you know, you haven't been a smoker yourself. And look, I wouldn't count myself as actually having been a smoker either. You know, during my teenage years, there was the, you know, the peer pressure of trying to smoke. And maybe for a month or two, I sort of, you know, used to light up, but I don't think I ever really inhaled properly. So look, I never have really seen myself as a smoker as well. But I think one of the things that as therapists makes us actually therapists, is that we have the ability to not just empathize, but put ourselves in our client's shoes and understand what they're going through. You know, because with a smoker, for example, you know, can you imagine what it feels like to, wherever you go, you're looked at like a leper, you know, someone who's being shunned socially. And also feel like a slave, because you're being chained to these little sticks. You know, several times a day have to check, do I have enough? Otherwise, I'll need to go to the shop and get some more. You know, that anxiety about I'm going to run out of smokes. It must be huge, because it drives people to drop everything and go to the shop to get smokes. So can you imagine though the freedom of that? And I once was working with a very artistic smoker, and I asked her, so what's the picture of you of these smokes, she mentioned slavery. And she literally said it's like being chained and having this huge, heavy, you know, metal ball, I guess like you'd sort of seen in pictures of jails or something, you know, this huge metal ball just literally chained up by this. So when you're freeing someone from that, you know, on top of, hey, I'm able to save this person 10,000 or whatever it is per year, there's so much value that we can, you know, we're providing to them. And again, the value that we're providing by maybe 80, 90% of the people that it's really successful for, I think so much outweighs when it doesn't work, you know, because they've probably still got something out of it. As, you know, as you say, they still probably got as a minimum the understanding why they're actually not ready yet. And probably got an understanding of, this is what I need to change within my mindset, so I'm going to be ready.
So a question for you then. Imagine therapist, they've had a few clients to stop smoking. They're not seemingly getting the success that they want. They're finding that the clients they're working with are just seemingly not ready to quit. I guess this question is twofold. You know, what advice would you give to those therapists in that situation? Both in terms of how to become better with helping people, but also how to push through that perhaps developing limiting belief that they may have about, oh, I'm seeing people and I'm just not getting the results that they've come to see me for. I mustn't be that good.
Yeah. Look, I think that's a really great question, because when I started off, I'd probably put my success rate somewhere around about 60% with smokers. And that's probably one of the things that sort of triggered within me that questioning, what can I do better?
Yeah.
So maybe it is a mindset thing that we can look at it either as an opportunity there's some things I can do better, rather than looking at it as that we're failing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's probably the important thing as a therapist, again, look at the opportunities, because every single client that comes in, all they are is an opportunity. It's not, this is now a non-smoker because they've walked in, but this is an opportunity for a non-smoker to walk out. So I think, look, there's probably two sides to this. One is look at what we're doing. What am I doing that I could do better? Maybe not even better, but actually different, you know? And that might even go with some conversations. You know, if a client says, oh, this didn't seem to work for me, explore what's missing. Not just go and say, oh, you just won't.
Well, that's a shame.
You know, come back when you're ready.
Yeah.
That's sort of just closing the door.
Mm.
But actually try and figure out, what is it that this client, you know, didn't get that they need to get over that point. But the other thing might be to actually look at, how are you actually framing your clients up? You know, from the moment when you're initially talking to them. So are you just taking in anybody who says, I want to stop smoking, or I need to stop smoking? Or are you having a conversation with them to filter out those that are ready to go ahead or those that aren't? And I'll tell you one thing I've found is a good filter is actually the price point. Because if somebody comes to you, and look, if I talk about price point, when I started, I think my price point was like $49 as a special offer, you know. Once I finished that special offer, I think I was charging $150 for quit smoking. But every few years I decided that, and this was probably the hardest thing for me to do, is up my price. But as I've upped my price, my quality of client has become better. And what I mean with better is I've been getting those who really want to stop. Because probably over the last 2 or 3 years, I don't think I've actually needed to turn anyone away. But one on the phone call, yes, I'm not turning them away. They're turning themselves away because they're questioning the price. And I think that's the thing, you know, if people are buying by price, are they really buying on outcome? No, they're not looking at the outcome. They're looking at you charging $500.
Yeah.
Or you're charging, you know, $800, $1,000, you know, and people going, whoa, that's, you know, I don't want to pay that. They're not thinking, I want a life that I can breathe or where I can see my grandkids grow up or whatever it might be. Whereas people who, you know, are happy to hand over that $500 or $1,000, they probably already have made a decision that they're going to get value from it. So that would be a good indicator that they're actually ready to go ahead. And all now as a therapist we need to do is just help them to go through that process so that decision is, you know, in concrete. Yeah.
It's funny, I know that when I was exploring my own concerns about working with smokers, I'd reached a point where I thought, look, either I'm going to refer every single smoking client to someone else, or I need to throw myself into the deep end with this. I need to research it. I need to come up with something that I can work with so that when people come and see me, that confidence is there, that structure is there, the meat on the bones. And I decided to do that. And the turning point for me was actually when I realized that all smoking is about habitual behavior. When I kind of chunked up and recognized that larger theme, it became so much more fascinating for me and so much more interesting. And not only that, all the various different techniques and approaches that I was exploring could be useful across so many different, you know, different presenting issues and topics.
Mm.
So to me, it really cemented why learning how to do stop smoking properly is absolutely important for hypnotherapists as just having that toolkit there. Mm. I guess, you know, if people were keen to work with you to discover your own training, how and when can they do that? Be great if I could string together a sentence today, wouldn't it? So how and when can they do that?
Yes. Well, at the moment, I'm planning to do another workshop, a live workshop, start of the new year. So probably around about February. I'm also working on actually doing a non-live workshop. So
a dead one.
A self-study.
Oh, yeah. Right, self-study work. Okay, yep, good. Yes.
for therapists, yeah. Look, yes, that's probably also going to come out in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, I'm also open to people getting in touch with me if they want to ask me questions, definitely. You know, my mission is to help therapists help more people because that's the only way I can sort of increase my reach to help more people. So, but look, what I'd like to share with you is two stories, if you don't mind, that might give you a bit of a, and also the listeners, a bit of an idea of the thought process that sometimes we should consider when we're fearing the outcome of something. So, you know, I grew up, and my dad was one of these, you know, people that was an employee and you're loyal to your employer until you retire. And so that's the, I guess, part of the mindset that I grew up under is you're an employee, you're a good employee until you retire. So I was not, I didn't grow up in sort of a, I guess what people would think as an entrepreneurial mindset. But after I'd been working in IT for 20 years, I sort of had, you know, had enough of it because it was becoming quite monotone. And I started seeking for something else. And really probably what triggered this was back in the early 2000s. And, you know, there was a lot of seminars going around about financial freedom and how to set yourself up and so on. So I got caught up with that with my wife. We both were sort of interested in how can we create a better future for ourselves. And all, you know, all paths sort of led towards or were pointing towards owning a business. So I probably spent 3-4 years looking at different businesses, looking at franchises, then even went off. I eventually had a business mentor who I was, you know, bouncing ideas off and so on. So I was doing a lot of work, a lot of research work, a lot of preparation work. And eventually an idea had crystallized. Then I did, I think it was like a 10-month intense workshop while I was still working full time, doing I guess the preparation work to run a business. So I was really preparing myself very well to run a business. And then I set up this business, I think it was 2006. And actually the business was doing really well. But I wasn't. Even though I'd done so much preparation work for the business, I hadn't done a lot of preparation work on myself or my relationship and how all of this would be impacting me and my wife. So it got to the point where I lost everything. My wife ran away because she couldn't put up with me. I couldn't deal with the business because of the stress I was dealing with. I therefore, you know, couldn't pay back the debt I had. And so I lost everything. And that was in spite of me doing all this preparation work to the extent that even one of my business advisors said, well, he looked at all the work I'd done before I sort of, it was the start date of this business, saying, you know, it's amazing. All this work you've done, it's so sorry, you're going to do really well. But I lost everything. And then if I look at my journey with hypnotherapy, which was very different. So as I've already mentioned, you know, I sort of really just stumbled into it, just out of curiosity, out of interest. And then I decided, you know, I had no experience really how to deal with a client, okay? I'd done a few practice sessions, done some practices, you know, with the therapist, the other therapists in the course. But I decided that, look, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? It's just not going to work. And really, what does it mean that it's not going to work? I'm still going to have experiences. And even those people that I'm working with are going to have experiences. And so I took the approach that I'm just going to go out there. I'm just going to do it. Because that's going to be the best way to prove to myself if it works or doesn't work for me. And then if we fast forward to the course that I started, as I mentioned also that, you know, I never saw myself as someone who's going to be teaching other therapists. But when the idea came about, and it was a big wall to break through that I'm going to do this course. And then for the course, I was interviewing several people and even, you know, inviting them was a huge wall to break through. But I just took this approach that there's so much to gain and really so little to lose. And I think it brings back to, you know, when we talked about value.
Yeah.
If we go ahead, as a therapist go ahead, and even if we're only catching half of the people, helping half of the people, there's 50% who are gaining so much from what we're doing, you know, and really the others haven't lost anything.
Mm.
They've still had an experience. So we have so much opportunity and really the potential of what we could lose under, you know, hyphens is so, so small. And that's really, I think, from that experience that I had back in with my business in the past, has helped me now to, I wouldn't say being a risk taker, but actually being an experience taker.
Yeah, that's a nice reframe.
That's the most valuable thing we can have, is actually have those experiences. And we have the opportunity as therapists in allowing other people, enabling other people to have experiences. So, yeah.
That was thank you so much for that. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
So many people have got so much out of this. So I really do appreciate the fact that you've been so willing to share personal stories like you have and the insight and wisdom that you have. If people want to find you online, where can they find you?
They can find me on Facebook under The Hypnocoaches is my business name. So they can look up the Hypnocoach and find me on Facebook, or obviously under my personal name, Ernest McLeod. They might find me as well. There's a few other Ernest McLeods on Facebook I discovered, but yeah. So, and look, you know, if you have the ability to share contact details, by all means, feel free to share my Facebook page. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Make sure I'll see if I can edit in underneath now. It should be there. Right. Okay. And awesome. Okay. Extra editing jobs. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you for everyone for listening to this episode, and we'll catch you all in the next one. Until then, take care.